This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, joined today by Torch columnist Matt Pelkey for our official UFC 104 preview show. We've got 11 bouts on the card scheduled. We've got two coming for free on Spike TV and a five-card pay-per-view schedule, and then four other bouts that could make air on either the Spike TV card or the pay-per-view card. So, Matt, let's just get to it. Down at the bottom, we start with a heavyweight bout between Stefan Struve and Chase Gormley. Gormley was supposed to face one of the night's co-main eventers in Ben Rothwell, both at Affliction's third event in August and also on this card. But with the departure of Shane Carwin, Rothwell was moved up. Now, Gormley is 6-0 coming into this fight with Stefan Struve, and this is one where Gormley needs to use his power to do what others have done to Struve, most notably Junior Dos Santos in Struve's UFC debut. If he lets this one go to the ground, he's in a world of trouble against the very, very skilled submission specialist, but very lacking in the stand-up game, Stefan Struve.
Yeah, I like Struve in this one. He's a real matchup nightmare for a lot of heavyweights, being so tall, and he's got those really long limbs. Not a whole lot of guys in the heavyweight division that you can see capable of using the rubber guard, but he's one of them. This is, I think, his third, maybe fourth fight in the UFC, and Gormley's making his debut. Generally, it's smart to take the guy with the experience, and he's got 20 fights to his credit at such a young age, a lot more than the six for Gormley. So I think Gormley will try to resort to his wrestling because that's what he knows to go to, and that's going to be his downfall. Struve's going to snatch a limb at some point. I got Struve by submission in the first round.
Agreed. I think he's going to find himself reverting back to that wrestling because it's what his bread and butter is, and that's just going to be the wrong thing to do in this fight, I think. And I think seven fights into this will be his seventh fight, I think he'll find himself learning quickly that you can't do that against a guy like Stefan Struve. Like you said, that height advantage that he has, I mean, he's 6'11". It's a ridiculous advantage over most heavyweights coming in at 6'1", 6'2". I mean, it's just very something unique to have to deal with. And I agree. I think Struve's going to find a limb at some point in that first round and pick up a submission. So very much in agreement on that first fight. We move on to a light heavyweight bout between Kyle Kingsbury and Razaka Al-Hassan. Now, the last time we saw Al-Hassan, his arm was being pushed the opposite direction by Steve Cantwell. And Kyle Kingsbury is coming off of a loss to Tom Lawler at the Ultimate Fighter 8 finale. He was a member of that that season 8 of the Ultimate Fighter. So he's going to get his second chance in the octagon, taking on Al-Hassan here. It's a tough one to try to figure out here because we don't know a whole lot about what the two are going to bring to the table here. I think Kingsbury is going to bring a bit of a harder punch, and Hassan's going to bring a bit of a better submission game. But I don't know that he's going to be able to get this one to the ground, and I think Kingsbury's going to pick up a TKO victory in the second round in this one.
I'm pretty much in agreement with you on this one. I've got Kingsbury by TKO in the first round. I think the way the hard thing to judge in a fight like this is these guys are so young and so relatively inexperienced that if they take 6 to 8 months off in between fights, they can come back as almost a completely different fighter, kind of improve 100% type of thing. So we don't really know what either one's going to bring. Just going by what we know, though, Kingsbury is probably going to be winging heavy shots, and it'll probably be the stronger of the fighter, or the stronger of the two fighters. And Al-Hassan just kind of stands there with his head straight up waiting to get punched, and somebody's going to knock him out, and I think that's going to be Kyle Kingsbury. I've got him by the first round, though.
Next up, we've got George Rivera against Rob Kimmins. Rivera just signed a new contract extension with the UFC at the age of 37, and he comes into this bout after split decision victory over Nissan Osternick, which followed a submission loss to Martin Kampman last year. So he's fought once this year so far, coming into his second fight of the year. Rob Kimmins comes in 2-1 in the UFC so far, Just picked up the submission of the night at the Fight Night event in April against Joe Vedepo. And he comes in. This is another submission versus striker matchup, with Rivera being more of the striker, and Kimmins obviously with a submission advantage. He's finished 14 of his 22 victories by submission. I see this one going Kimmins' way. I mean, Rivera is getting up there in age. Kimmins has a lot of upside to him. His only two losses since 2006 were to Dan Miller and Marvin Eastman. Eastman won by decision, and Miller by submission in the UFC. So nothing to be ashamed of there. He's got a very good record, 22-4 overall. He's not an upper echelon middleweight, but I think he's a step above George Rivera here. I think he picks up the submission in the first round.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way there. We're going to have to disagree at some point, but Kimmins, they're kind of going in opposite directions. Kimmins on the way up and Rivera on the way down. I almost question his decision to sign that new contract. Obviously, he needs to pay his bills, but he's getting up there in age and is clearly slowing down and still, you know, dealing with a tragedy from his daughter dying. I want to say it was maybe a year ago or so. But he just doesn't seem like as high quality of a fighter. Not that he was ever elite, but he was a middle-tier gatekeeper when he was at his best a few years ago. Now he just seems to be slowing down, and I think I'm with you all the way through Kimmins in the first round with a submission.
We've got Snooze Fest 2009 up next with Yushin Okami against Chael Sonnen. I mean, this one should be pretty clear-cut. This is Okami's game to control. Sonnen's not going to be able to deal with the size and strength advantage that Okami brings. I mean, he's deceptively strong at 185 and is one of the bigger middleweights in the game. And, I mean, he wins fights for a reason. He wins fights for a reason. He's going to be able to battle down Sonnen and pick up the decision here. I think any other finish in this fight would just be surprising. I think Okami takes this one by an easy decision.
Well, this is one of a couple of upsets that I have on my picks. I think Sonnen is going to out-wrestle Yushin Okami for 3 rounds. And, I mean, let's be honest here. It's going to be either who out-wrestles who or, you know, who wins the clinch war. If it ends up being a clinch war, advantage Okami. If it ends up on the ground, that's advantage Chael Sonnen. He's an Olympic-caliber wrestler. And he's maybe not as good of a wrestler as he was 10 years ago, but he's still pretty darn good compared to the rest of mixed martial artists. I think he's going to hold him down and pound him for 3 rounds exactly like he did to Dan Miller last time out. It won't be as easy as that seemingly was. It'll be a little tougher. It'll be a close fight, but I got Chael Sonnen with the upset by decision.
We'll move on to the Spike TV prelim card. We've got Anthony Hardonk against Pat Barry, and this one is going to be one of the better heavyweight kickboxing bouts set in a cage. That's basically what it is. Neither guy has much of a ground game to speak of, and this one will likely be primarily contested on the feet, and that's where I see Anthony Hardonk taking Pat Barry out. Barry is a small heavyweight, and Hardonk is not. And that is the difference in this fight. I think Hardonk is going to be able to abuse Barry more than he's has been in his MMA career, and I think, you know, obviously he's got no ground game that was shown against Tim Haig, and if he's not able to get Hardonk down and out quickly, then I think this one is going to be Hardonk's going forward. So I'm going to take Hardonk with the TKO in the second round on this one.
Well, I think everybody can agree that this fight is ending one of two ways. One or the other gets knocked out or stopped by strikes. I pray that this doesn't go to the ground, because I don't want to see either of these guys in a jiu-jitsu match. They're there to stand and bang with each other and do it in a very technically proficient way, too. It'll be a lot of fun to watch. I'm calling another upset here. At least I'm assuming it'll be an upset. I haven't seen the line for the fight yet, but I'm going to take Barry for no other reason than because he shouldn't win this fight. I just feel like he's going to catch him with something, and we're going to see maybe him finally get the big win that people can see that he can start to make a name for himself in the heavyweight division. He's a fun fighter to watch. He's got a great personality. Maybe he makes a drop down to 205 at some point. That's kind of a lot of weight for him to cut, but he can probably still do that, and maybe he should. But for right now, I think he pulls the upset, gets a big win to get his career jump started in the UFC. Barry over Hardonk by knockout in round one.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that fight to see how Barry reacts to a taste of his own medicine, because he's going to get some leg kicks of his own on the receiving end from Hardonk. So how he responds to that is, I mean, they're going to be able to compare leg bruises after that fight.
We have battle scars to show each other and tell our kids about.
Exactly. Next up, to finish off the Spike TV portion, is Ryan Bader against Eric Schaefer. This is a wrestler versus jiu-jitsu guy here, and I think for Bader, he kind of lost a bit of his killer instinct against Carmelo Marrero earlier this year, and Schaefer has been on a bit of a tear recently. I mean, he's picked up 4 wins straight, most recently over Antonio Mendez in January, after submitting Houston Alexander in, I believe, it was September of last year. So Schaefer's been on a bit of a roll, but Bader is still undefeated. He's the winner of the Ultimate Fighter's 8th season. Looked very good in knocking out another jiu-jitsu guy in Vinny Magalhaes, and he's going to likely be looking to give them a reason to put him on a pay-per-view card later on. I think he definitely hits harder than Schaefer, and if he can use his wrestling effectively, he can definitely neutralize what Schaefer's advantage is, because Schaefer is much better on the top game than he is from his back. I mean, he's still dangerous from his back and still dangerous from his guard, but he's much more effective with his game when he's on top, and I don't think he's going to be in this fight against Ryan Bader. I think Bader picks this one up with a 3rd-round TKO.
Yeah, I think that's probably the good money pick, but I'm just feeling crazy for some reason on this card, and I've got Schaefer in another upset on this one. I like Eric Schaefer. He's really tough. I mean, he just takes a beating and keeps coming. The fight with Houston Alexander is a perfect example of that. I thought 4 or 5 times he was going to be done in that fight and still managed to get the fight to the ground and lock in a choke. I think the same thing's going to happen here. Obviously, Bader has the power advantage. He has the wrestling advantage. If the fight goes to the ground, it's likely to be with Schaefer on the bottom, and I think you're right. He's going to struggle from his back, but I think he's better in the jiu-jitsu, you know, kind of the American jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu slash wrestling. I think he'll be able to get a sweep from the bottom at some point and put Bader on his back, where Bader will be a kind of a fish out of water, especially with a guy like Schaefer on top of him. I think he'll pound a little bit and then snatch something. I think it's going to be a fun fight. I think this will be a contender for fight of the night, with Schaefer taking a beating before pulling something out. I got him by submission in the 2nd round.
We move on to the main pay-per-view card. First up, a welterweight bout between Anthony Johnson and Yoshiyuki Yoshida. We got a bit of information earlier this week about Anthony Johnson and his insane weight cutting. He's fighting at 170 pounds, and he was walking around 220 as recently as last month. So he's cutting a ridiculous 50 pounds of weight to get down to the 170-pound weight limit. He's likely not going to be able to do that for much longer, we'll probably see him in the middleweight division sooner rather than later. But coming into this bout, I think this one is all for Rumble to roll. Yoshida is a very good fighter, has a lot of accolades coming into the UFC, but he got himself knocked out by Josh Koscheck. He rebounded with a guillotine over Brandon Wolf in May of this year, but Anthony Johnson is not Brandon Wolf, and Anthony Johnson will be hitting hard and hitting often in this fight, and I think Yoshida's in for another lights-out performance as Johnson picks up another TKO victory. I think he takes this one in the late in the 1st round.
Yeah, I'm with you all over that one. Johnson's, he's a much better striker here. Yoshida's only chance to win this fight really is to get it to the mat, and I just don't see him being able to do that. This is basically just going to be a repeat of the Josh Koscheck fight. Johnson's going to tee off on him and have a pretty impressive highlight reel finish. I've got him as well, TKO in the first round.
On to a very intriguing lightweight bout between Spencer Fisher and Joe Stevenson. I really think this one has the chance to be very similar to Fisher's second bout with Sam Stout, where the two of them are just pummeling each other for three rounds. I think this one is going to go to a decision. I think Joe Stevenson is going to get the better of the exchanges in this one. I think he feels he needs it more at this point. Fisher has won three straight, got a razor-thin decision against Cal Uno in a fight that a lot of people thought Uno might have won. Joe Stevenson's coming in off of a good victory over Nate Diaz after a very close loss to Diego Sanchez, which followed his loss to Kenny Florian. If he wants to ever get back into contention in the lightweight division, he needs to string together wins. I think he does it here. I think he picks up another decision victory.
I agree with you that Stevenson wins, but I disagree on how the fight's going to go down. I think had it not been for his last fight against Nate Diaz, I would have agreed with you exactly on how the fight was going to go down. That's how Joe Stevenson seemed to have become as a fighter, just willing to wage stand-up wars when his advantage is on the ground. And he thought, well, hey, it's not too bad if I lose as long as I put on a good show. Well, finally realized, you know, I want to be a champion and I need to win to do that. And he really got back to basics against Nate Diaz, taking him down, grinding him on the mat for three rounds against a very good submission artist in Nate Diaz. I was very impressed with that victory. I think he's going to use the same strategy against Spencer Fisher. That's where he has the big advantage in this fight, is on the ground, using his submissions, using his strength. I think he pounds Spencer Fisher and ends up, you know, kind of pounding him out and breaking his will and snatching some, maybe a guillotine sometime in the second round.
Next up, we got Gleison Tibau against Josh Neer. A less intriguing lightweight bout, but still one that's going to be very competitive nonetheless. Neer is a fairly well-rounded fighter, has almost as many victories by TKO as he does by submission. Tibau was on the wrong end of what many people felt was a bad decision, a split decision loss to Melvin Gillard. Sorry, this summer, but they're both coming off of losses, both looking to win. This one, it's kind of a toss-up. Both fighters are capable of submitting the other. Both fighters are capable of decisioning the other. Both fighters are capable of knocking out the other. So it's almost a right down the middle even fight, and I'm going to give the edge to Neer. Coming off the loss to Pellegrino, he was very upset with his performance in that one. I think he comes out a lot better in this one, and I think he picks up a victory. I'll give him the submission in the third round.
I've got Tibau in this one. I think the fight's going to play out a lot like Josh Neer's fight with Kurt Pellegrino did, not because Gleison Tibau is such a good wrestler like Kurt Pellegrino is, but just because he's a bigger, stronger grappler, I think, than Josh Neer. Josh Neer is pretty dangerous from his back still. We've seen him spit people off his back before. But Gleison Tibau, I think, is going to be too good from top control to get submitted by Josh Neer. I think it's going to be a lot of Gleison Tibau, you know, trying to pass guard, a lot of positioning battles, and him just remaining in top control throughout most of the fight with Josh Neer firing off submissions from his back, but spending too much time on his back, and it's going to end up costing him here. I think Gleison Tibau takes this one by decision.
On to the co-main event of the evening, Cain Velasquez against Ben Rothwell. We talked about this one a bit the other day, and this one for me, really, I see the slight upset coming for Ben Rothwell. I think Velasquez, after his performance against Czech Congo, he showed some weaknesses in his game. He was able to revert to his wrestling and use his ground game to survive some really bad spots after nearly getting dropped by Czech Congo on multiple occasions in that fight. He's not going to be able to do the same against the takedown defense of Ben Rothwell, and I think Ben Rothwell will hit harder than everyone Velasquez has faced except for Congo. I really think Ben Rothwell is going to make a statement in this fight. I think he's going to pick up a TKO victory late in the second round. I see the upset coming for Velasquez here. I'm not buying into the Velasquez hype yet, and I think Ben Rothwell is going to prove that line of thinking right.
I do believe the Velasquez hype. I agree with you. This is going to be a really tough fight for him. If he wins this fight, period, it's going to be a very impressive statement for him to really show where he stands as an upcoming heavyweight prospect. You know, is he still a prospect, or is he really ready for the top of the top division? I think it's going to be a grinder of a fight. He's going to take some shots just like he did in the Congo fight. He's probably going to be rocked at least once in the fight, but I think his will, his determination are going to carry him through this fight. He's going to dig deep and get takedowns when he needs to and be smothering from the top and work enough strikes just like he did at Czech Congo. I think he's going to do that for three rounds and pick up a decision win here.
And that brings us to the main event of the evening, the light heavyweight championship bout between Lyoto Machida and Mauricio Shogun Hua. This fight really, to me, comes down to two questions. Does Shogun have the gas tank to go into the championship rounds? And will he be able to figure out the timing of Lyoto Machida? I think the answer to both of those questions, for me, is no, and that's why Machida will continue his reign atop the 205 division. I'm not sold on Hua's resurgence after the bout against Chuck Liddell. He looked much better than he did against Mark Coleman, where he gassed really, really badly. But the fight with Liddell didn't go long enough for us to see whether he would have done the same thing. He's not going to take Machida out early. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to figure out the timing of Machida, because no one has. No one has yet. I think Machida is going to be able to take this one wherever he wants to. He's going to be able to control this fight, and I think he's going to finish Shogun early on in the fourth round. I think Machida is going to take advantage of all the tools that he has, and it's going to be a good fight. I think Shogun's going to be competitive. I think he'll probably look better than any of Machida's previous opponents have. I think he may even possibly sneak out a round in this one, probably the first or second. But I don't think he's going to win this fight. I don't think he's going to end the Machida era before it even gets started. I think Machida takes this one with a fourth-round TKO to stay light heavyweight champion.
Yeah, I'm almost identical with you on that one. The questions coming into this fight all seem to be centered around, well, is it going to be the Machida from a few years ago when he was at his best? Is he finally at, you know, 100%? Is he healthy? Is he back to his usual explosion? And I just don't think that it matters. I think if he was at his best, Machida is still the better fighter. I think Machida is right up there with Anderson Silva, Fedor, and George St. Pierre. Those are the big four right now to me as far as top pound-for-pound fighters in the world. And I think Machida just might be at the top of that list. He's gotten better every time out, and his competition has gotten tougher every time out. He's still learning and getting better, and that's a scary proposition for everybody right now. I think he controls this fight for as long as it lasts. I think he's going to be relatively cautious, but he's going to pick his spots like he always does. And when he finally sees his opponent hurt, he's going to pounce just like he always does. He's a very aggressive fighter when he has somebody hurt. He just doesn't see the point of taking a chance when he doesn't have his fighter hurt, when they're alert and could catch him with something coming in and change the fight. So he picks his spots. He's going to keep doing it here. I think Hua has a better gas tank than we've seen in the last couple fights in this fight, but it's still not going to be enough. He's going to start to get tired chasing Machida around, and getting frustrated tires you out too, and that's going to happen here. I think sometime late in the third round he wears him down and drops him with a shot and finishes it off on the ground with strikes late in the third round.
I think it's going to be a great fight. I think it's going to be a better event than maybe people are anticipating, because there's not a whole lot of excitement and buzz about it. I think it's going to be a really good card, just fight-wise. I think we're going to see some good bouts. And we're getting an extra two fights on Spike TV for free, so you really can't complain with 4 hours of MMA action on a Saturday night. I mean, it just doesn't get much better than that. And it's the start of what will be a major season of events. I mean, we're going to get Halloween weekend off, and then we get right into Fedor Rogers, Couture Vera, Lesnar Carwin, Mike Brown, Jose Aldo. I mean, it's all in there, plus a couple of challengers events that have some very intriguing fights with some up-and-comers coming on Showtime as well. So just a ton of stuff coming in the month of November, and we really get back in action here starting on Saturday. So Matt, we'll talk more about this event throughout the week, and then we'll also have our review show following the event, likely Sunday morning. So once again, thanks for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for listening. For Matt Pelkey, this is Jamie Penick signing off.